Broadcasting System presents The Pursuit of Happiness with Paul Robeson, Robert Benchley, Gertrude Neeson, Carl Van Doren, Carl Carmer, and as your master of ceremonies, Burgess Meredith.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, of these we sing. If you want to know what happiness is, and who doesn't? Well, the Hawaiian Americans have a song for it. They don't know what to call it. Some say it's a war chant. Others claim it's a laughing song. Some are sure it's a song of love. At any rate, these three ideas, war, love, and laughter, seem to be agreeably mixed up in the Hawaiian mind. And so we've asked one of the nation's foremost glamour girls to unscramble the mystery for us, Miss Gertrude Neeson.
Everyone is happy in the island. They've discovered that the sweetest things in life are free. Oh, yes, the sweetest things in life are free. Night and daytime, lovely playtime. Oh, molly, molly, song and laughter. Hi, oh, huddly, hoopy. Hi, oh, huddly, hi, oh, huddly, hoopy. Hi, oh. If you want to see blue Hawaiian water, if you want to hear sweet Hawaiian laughter, just come right along, hear the siren song of the sweet Hawaiian maiden. You will dance to the music of the tom-tom. You can eat the fish and poi and say yum, yum. Every daytime, happy gay time. Oh, molly, molly, song and laughter. The very happy faculty of relaxing in the shadow of a cocoa tree. Never fretful, never worry. Everyone is happy in the island. They've discovered that the sweetest things in life are free. Oh, yes, the sweetest things in life are free. Night and daytime, lovely playtime. Oh, molly, molly, song and laughter. Hi, oh, huddly, hippie. Hi, oh, huddly, hi, oh, huddly, hippie. Hi, oh.
As the Hawaiians always say in their lovely language, atta girl, Neeson, atta girl. If you ask me, it's a love song. Now, sometime after Hawaii was admitted to the Union as a territorial possession, Robert Benchley was born 5,000 miles away. It's quite a coincidence. Near what is now Worcester, Massachusetts. Mr. Benchley has since lived long enough to regret it. After some years of determined loafing, he became one of this nation's top humorists, a dramatic critic of notable stature, and a man who makes it possible to sit through movie shorts. He is, in fact, the foremost living threat to that great American institution, the double feature. It is in this guise we encounter him now. Mr. Benchley's merciless scalpel, that's what it says, lays bare another all-American problem for us as he illustrates how to help your wife buy your clothes. The scene, Dingle's Department Store, Main Street. Enter Mr. Benchley and wife.
Well, here we are at Dingle's, dear. I can get everything I need right here.
Yes, and the $60 we've saved from the budget is all going to be spent on you. New hat, shoes, ties, and socks.
And don't forget a double-breasted blue serge suit with peaked lapels.
Oh, wait a minute, dear. Just look at this lovely bottle of perfume. How much is it, miss?
$30, madam.
$30? That's as much as a double-breasted blue serge suit with pink lapels. Besides, you don't need the perfume now. Remember, Christmas is coming.
I know, dear, but Postmaster Farley says we should all do our Christmas shopping early.
Postmaster Farley says a lot of things.
Well, let's not argue about it.
All right.
Give her the money.
Yes, dear. There you are, miss.
Will there be anything else?
A blue serge suit with peaked lapels, please.
We'll get your suit in a minute, dear. But let's stop over here at the shoe department first.
That's a good idea. I can use a nice pair of tan shoes. They always go well with a blue serge suit.
Good afternoon, sir. What can I do for you?
Well,
My husband would like to look at some tan shoes. Now, just sit right down here, dear. I'll be back in a minute. I just want to look around a little.
Now then, what size would you like?
Oh, I don't know. What size are they wearing this year?
Well, look, perhaps we'd better get your measurements. We'll just slip these shoes off. Boy, that's quite a foot you got there.
Yes, sir. I wouldn't go anywhere without it.
Now, look, what shape would you like? Box toe or pernty?
I'll take pernty, please.
Erky Turk, I'll be right back.
Feels good to get those shoes off. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. This little pig went to market. This little pig stayed at home.
Well, here we are. Let's try these on. There we go. Now we'll lace them up nice and tight.
Ooh, hey! Ow! Hey, ow!
How do they feel on you?
Very comfortable.
Why don't you walk around in them? Go ahead, up and down.
Up and down?
Yeah.
All right, I will. Hey, these shoes pinch a little.
Where do you feel it?
All the way up to my shoulder.
Oh, darling.
That's my wife. Do you mind if I walk around in these a little? I may break them in that way.
Sure, go right ahead.
I'm coming.
Oh, there you are, Robert. Guess what I just saw?
A double-breasted blue serge suit with peaked lapels?
No. There's the grandest sale on face cream today. It's right down this aisle. Come along.
All right, all right.
Look at the charming girl behind the counter. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if she was a debutante. Oh, miss.
All right, hold your horses. What can I do for you?
Debutante. Must have had a coming out party in a freight car.
I'd like to see that special, miss, on face cream.
Oh, we got a swell special today. Two jars for $5, you know what I mean? Now, this stuff in this here jar is great stuff, you know what I mean?
Just, how does this here stuff in this here jar work?
Nothing to it. I'll give you a demonstration. Now, look at these prunes in this here plate. All wrinkled, you know what I mean? So we take some cream out of this jar, rub it all over the prunes, rub it in good, and boom, what do you got?
What?
Peaches.
Peaches? I don't think my wife would look so good walking around with fuzz on her face.
Oh, don't worry about that, because the cream in this other jar takes the fuzz off.
Then what happens?
She'll be a prune again.
Ah, that's a vicious cycle. You know what I mean?
Just what is this cream made of, young woman?
Why, it's made from the extract of radishes, carrots, avocados, celery, and cucumbers. Should I wrap it up?
Oh, don't bother. We'll eat it right here.
Stop wasting time, dear. I'll take it, miss. Just give the girl $5.
Thanks, you know what I mean?
Well, I still have got $25 to spend.
Oh, I'm afraid you haven't, darling. You see, while you were trying on your shoes, I stopped at the ladies' tailoring department and ordered something for myself.
What?
The loveliest double-breasted blue serge suit with peaked lapels. You don't mind, do you?
Oh, no, indeed, no, indeed. But there's one little favor I'd like to ask of you, darling.
Oh, what is it?
Can I wear it on Sundays?
And so, as the sunset deepens on his rugged profile, we bid farewell to picturesque Bobby Benchley and set our course for another port call. And may we remind you seriously that Bob's Tuesday Evening Old Gold Hour is a swell show to listen to. Columbia's American correspondent Carl Kammer returns now from Hartford, Connecticut, by way of Brattleboro, Vermont, with hometown news gathered from every corner of the land by wire, wireless, pony express, carrier pigeon, and dog sled. You won't hear from London, you won't hear from Berlin, you won't hear from Paris, but you will hear from America and Columbia's American correspondent Carl Kammer. Take it away, Carl.
What say, Buzz?
Take it away, Carl.
Take what away?
Come on, you're on the air. What's new?
Oh, nothing much. No news to get all that dander up about. Americans have been taking this week pretty easy. Out in California, folks are sort of excited over voting next Tuesday on a scheme to make extra taxes and 2-cent stamps feed everybody over 50. Sort of an annual event on the West Coast. Ohio's trying it too this year. Maybe it's catching. One election race that New Englanders will miss since Vermont decided to liquidate its smallest township is the one Katie Taylor used to win every year for a seat in the legislature. Used to be about 5 qualified voters in the township, including Katie, her husband, and the hired man. For some years, Katie is said to have rolled up a comfortable majority. On November 2nd, R.G. Pittman of Ocoee, Florida, cracked down on a 6-foot rattlesnake with a big stick. Hit it so hard, he broke 2 of his own ribs. And speaking of rattlesnakes, recent reports from upstate New York indicate considerable advance in the study of natural history due to the 50-year researches of the professional rattlesnake hunter, Bill Clark. In my travels, I had an interview with Bill and asked him about rattlesnakes. According to Bill, rattlesnake oil is good for what ails you, rheumatism or whatever it is. Loosens your joints, makes you supple. Said he knew a fellow once, used too much of it. Got so supple he couldn't stand up. Bill reckons time from the spring morning a few years ago when he went hunting rattlers with Dal Pratt, and Dal had gone ahead when Bill came upon a rock ravine not much bigger than a minute, and there, by golly, was all the rattlesnakes in the whole Adirondack country a-sunning themselves. 500 to 1,000 rattlers a-turning and a-twisting in the sun, and all of them singing so you could hear them half a mile. I called Dal Pratt, said Bill, and he come and jumped down beside me without seeing him. And there we was, with all them rattlers a-raising a ruckus all around us. I seen Pratt's eyes sort of flicker, so I says, if you be scared, you better get back up there on that rock. Well, says Pratt, I be. Now, I want you to hear a song about a Yankee farmer who was mowing his field and met a rattlesnake. Some verses they sing up in the Adirondacks. Frank Warner, who's going to sing it for you, and I got Yankee John Galusha of Minerva, New York, to sing it to us a few days ago. Frank, can you sing the Pison Sarpent the way Yankee John sings it?
Well, I'll try to sing it like he does, but I can't make my mustache quiver like his.
The radio audience can't see your mustache. You tell them it's a quivering, and they'll believe you.
All right, folks, it's a quivering. The farmer scares mowed around the field when a Pison Sarpent bit his heel. They took him home to Molly Dear, which made her feel so very queer. Now Molly had 2 ruby lips with which the Pison she did sip. But Molly had a holler too, and so the Pison killed them both.
Rattlesnake, Spenchley, and Gertrude Neeson. Now there's a typical Yankee Doodle mixture of sense and nonsense. It could only happen here, where laughter gets mixed up with everything from statesmanship to salesmanship, from Benchley to Lardner to Twain. Now, for today's quote of plain common sense, we now give you Benjamin Franklin, as portrayed by his most recent biographer, Carl Van Doren. Mr. Van Doren has prepared for us a dramatic sidelight on the philosophy of this most sensible and civilized of our American heroes. It's based on a little-known letter written by Franklin to all Europeans who, as he put it, are about to remove to the North American continent. Mr. Van Doren himself plays Benjamin Franklin. The scene, Passy, a suburb of Paris, about this month of the year 1783. The treaty which ended the revolution and established the independence of the United States has recently been signed. Benjamin Franklin, who as minister to France had carried the burden of the conflict just as Washington had carried it here in America, has at last a little leisure. We find him in his library with his grandson and secretary, Temple Franklin.
Grandfather?
Who is Temple?
You asked me to remind you of that answer you're going to write to all the questions you've been asked about America.
Oh, yes. I began it early this morning while you were still asleep. It will disappoint some of our friends in Europe, I'm afraid.
It will?
Yes, and this is why. Too many of them have mistaken ideas of what they'll find when they go to America, as they expect to do. Think of the European gentlemen who fondly believe that Americans are eager to welcome high-born strangers and give them advantages which the natives are not qualified to take.
I can't help thinking of them.
Well, I've written for such misinformed gentlemen here it is, that it is inadvisable for any person to go to America who has no quality to recommend him but that of his birth. In Europe, it has indeed its value, but it is a commodity that cannot be carried to a worse market than that of America, where people do not ask of a stranger, what is he, but what can he do?
Good point, but doesn't poor Richard say, all work and no play make Jack a dull boy?
No, he doesn't say that, Temple. But poor Richard does say, sloth, like rust, consumes faster than labor wears. The used key is always bright. Labor is life, to be cherished and honored. This new country, I say in my letter, is so vast that it will be centuries before it can be fully settled. There will be no poor in America until the land has all been taken up, and the people who cannot get land cannot get work either.
And if that time ever comes, Grandfather?
Then, as I wrote long ago when I was your age, Temple, the value of things will still be measured by labor. The riches of a country are to be estimated by the quantity of labor its people are able to purchase, and not by the quantity of gold and silver they possess. Whatever happens, it must still be remembered that private property is created by society and is subject to the calls of that society. The personal securities of life and liberty, these remain the same in every member of the society, and the poorest continue to have an equal claim to them with the most opulent.
But if America becomes as populous as Europe, surely European history will repeat itself in America, won't it?
Any prediction I could make would probably have the fate of the predictions I made in England before the Revolution.
And what fate do you mean?
No one would believe them till they came true. But I see safety for America only in a long separation from Europe. And I foresee safety for Europe, sooner or later, only in some kind of federated union of the nations, a United States of Europe. Otherwise, there will be wars forever. You know my final opinion concerning wars.
There never was a good war nor a bad peace.
That's it. Justice is as strictly due between neighbor nations as between neighbor citizens. A nation that makes an unjust war is only a great gang.
But after all, you helped make a war, Grandfather.
Oh, that was war of defense. Much as I hated war, I knew that if we are sheep, the wolves will eat us. We chose not to be eaten, but with the love of liberty to fight for the rights of man. God grant that not only the love of liberty, but also a thorough knowledge of the rights of man may someday pervade all the nations of the earth, so that a philosopher may set his foot anywhere on the surface and say, this is my country.
Thank you, Mr. Van Doren. I wish that those words could be heard all over the world just about now, even if they were written 150 years ago. Certainly, we'd like to see them spread around a lot, and that's one aim of this program, to give words like that a big audience. Another aim of ours is to discover and perform new American music. Today, we offer our first effort in that direction. It's a new dramatic ballad by Earl Robinson, an up-and-coming youngster from the University of Washington. Earl dropped in on us last week to play and sing his new composition. We liked it so well, we had him do it again next day for Paul Robeson. And Paul Robeson liked it so well, he's going to sing it for us now. Assisted by the Lynn Murray Singers, music by Earl Robinson, words by John Latouche, a young poet from Richmond, Virginia, title Ballad for Americans, and the singer, Paul Robeson.
In 76, the sky was red, thunder rumbling overhead. That King George couldn't sleep in his bed, and on that stormy morn, old Uncle Sam was born. Old Sam put on a three-cornered hat, and in the Richmond church he sat. And Patrick Henry told him that while America drew breath, it was liberty or death.
Oh, what kind of hat is a three-cornered hat?
Did they all believe in liberty in those days?
Nobody who was anybody believed it. Everybody who was anybody, they doubted it. Nobody had faith. Nobody. Nobody but Washington, Tom Paine, Benjamin Franklin, Chaim Solomon, Crispus Attucks, Lafayette, nobodies.
Yeah, the nobodies ran a tea party at Boston.
Yeah, Bessie Ross organized a sewing circle.
Yeah, Paul Revere had a horse race.
And a little ragged group believed it. And some gentlemen and ladies believed it. And some wise men and some fools, and I believed it too. And you know who I am.
Who are you, mister?
How come all this?
Well, I'll tell you. You see, it's like this.
No, let us tell you.
Then Mr. Tom Jefferson, a mighty fine man, he rolled it down in a mighty fine plan, and the rest all signed it with a mighty fine hand, and they crossed their T's and dotted their I's. Oh, brand new country in our mind. Oh, oh, oh.
And a mighty fine idea.
Yeah, it was adopted unanimously in Congress July 4th, 1776.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights,
that among these rights are life.
Yes, sir.
Liberty.
That's right.
Is that what they say?
The very words.
That sure does sound mighty fine.
Building a nation is awful tough. The people found the going rough. And 13 states weren't large enough. So they started to expand into the Western land. Yeah!
Anybody believed it. Everybody who was anybody, they stayed at home. But Lewis and Clark and the pioneers, driven by hunger, haunted by fears, the Klondike miners and the 49ers. Some wanted freedom and some wanted riches. Some liked to vote while others dug ditches. And I believe it too, and you know who I am.
No, I still don't know who you are.
Well, I started to tell you. You see, I represent the whole... Well, that's it. Yeah, that's the idea.
Lincoln was thin and long. His heart was high and his faith was strong. But he hated oppression, he hated wrong. And he went down to his grave to free the slave.
Man in white skin can never be free, while his black brother is in slavery. And we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain.
And the lament of the people, by the people and for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Abraham Lincoln said that on November 19th, 1863, in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
And he was right. I believe that, too.
You believe it? Who are you, anyway?
Well, I've been trying to tell you. You see...
The sea days came with a great big call, as America grew in peace and law. And a million wheels went around and round. The city reached into the sky and dug down deep into the ground.
body, they doubted it. And they are doubting still, and I guess they always will. But who cares what they say when I am on my way?
Say, will you please tell us who you are?
What's your name, buddy?
Where you going?
Who are you?
Well, I'm everybody who's nobody. I'm the nobody who's everybody.
What's your racket?
What do you do for a living?
Well, I'm an engineer, musician, street cleaner, carpenter, teacher.
How about a farmer?
Also.
Office clerk.
Yes, ma'am.
Mechanic.
That's right.
Housewife.
Certainly.
Factory worker.
You said it.
Stenographer.
Uh-huh.
Beauty specialist.
Absolutely.
Bartender.
Absolutely.
Truck driver.
Definitely.
Miner.
All of them, I am the et cetera and the and so forth that do the work.
Now, hold on here. What are you trying to give us?
Are you an American?
Am I an American? I'm just an Irish, Negro, Jewish, Italian, French, and English, Spanish, Russian, Chinese, Polish, Scotch, Hungarian, Litvak, Swedish, Finnish, Canadian, Greek, and Turk, and Czech, and double-check American. And that ain't all. I was baptized Baptist, Methodist, Congregationalist, Lutheran, Atheist, Roman Catholic, Orthodox, Jewish, Presbyterian, Seventh-day Adventist, Mormon, Quaker, Christian Scientist, and lots more.
You sure are something.
Our country's strong, our country's young, and the greatest songs are still unsung. From the plains and mountains we have sprung to keep the faith with those who went before.
We nobody for anybody believe it. We anybody for everybody have no doubt.
Out of the cheating, out of the shouting, out of the murders and lynching, out of the windbags, the patriotic spouting, out of uncertainty and doubting, out of the counterfeit and the bastardoon, it will come again. The marching song will come again.
As the mountains high as the valleys, high as the mountains, strong as the people who made it.
For I have always believed it, and I believe it now, and you know who I am.
Who are you?
America.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, all of these we sing. And there'll be more in the same order next week with the Rainbow Chasing Division headed by Jimmy Durante, the well-known American Eagle. Until then, this is Burgess Meredith saying, so long, America.
You have been listening to The Pursuit of Happiness with Burgess Meredith, Paul Robeson, Gertrude Neeson, Robert Benchley, Carl Carmer, and Carl Van Doren. The Pursuit of Happiness was produced and directed by Norman Corwin, written by George Faulkner. Mr. Benchley's script was written by Hank Lewis and Al Garson. The music directed by Mark Warno. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.